You're listening to the Nightlight Radio Network. This is Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, co-host of 21st Century Radio. We are happy to present this rebroadcast of our show on Nightlight. Enjoy. Joining us this hour is author Gary David. His Adventures Unlimited 2012 release, entitled Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest, is a fascinating continuation of a lifelong study he's made. Gary David's other books include The Orion Zone, The Eye of the Phoenix, and The Kivas of Heaven. As we've shared on 21st Century Radio for decades with numerous guests, there is a wisdom tradition on Earth based on the axiom, as above, so below, as within, so without. As I've shared in my own book, The Future of Human Experience, until the 1600s, we had a shared signatory in the heavens for our land-based sanctuaries, cities, and spiritual centers. This marker was the Orion star system, under which were built, among many things, the Great Pyramids of Egypt. This longitudinal meridian marker points to the galactic center, making Hopi cities, Hindu shrines, aboriginal gathering sites, ancient megalithic stone, standing stones, all connected. Having lost this precise orientation and awareness of its power in making Earth reflective of the cosmos, when the British Empire changed the meridian to Greenwich, that was in the 1600s, in order to create a method for keeping time on Earth, it was a bold change that threw the entire civilization of planet Earth off of its unifying orientation. And then we add to it something I've commented on before, the loss of the lunar calendar when the church dominated our calendar. And therefore, you wonder, is it any surprise that the Industrial Revolution would become an assault and exploitation of the Earth, its animals, and its people, given that we lost our cosmic alignment and our biological clock? This hour, you'll find out just how precise alignments are, in fact, on Earth prior to the 1600s, and why sacred societies from one side of the Earth to the other were able to communicate with each other without phones, without computers, but telepathically. Appreciate the wisdom and intelligence exhibited by the Hopis and Pueblo peoples of the Southwest as we travel the Earth in cosmic maps with our guide, Gary David. Thank you for joining us, Gary.
Thank you, Zohara. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. And so this is sort of something you've worked on your whole life. So why don't we start with, in the beginning of your book, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest, how you got interested in this and how the work of Robert Bovall and Adrian Gilbert inspired you.
Yes, I really have to go back quite a ways, over 20 years ago. I've been living in Arizona for 20 years. But before that time, I was living in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And the Black Hills are the sacred center for the Lakota Sioux, the indigenous group there. And they had also an earth-sky relationship. They looked at a certain constellation, which they called the Great Buffalo. And this buffalo was made up of a number of constellations that we recognize as Orion's Belt, the Pleiades, and the star Sirius. So it was a huge constellation. And I met a woman named Charlotte Black Elk, and she is the great-granddaughter of the famous Nicholas Black Elk, which wrote, he wrote the classic Black Elk Speaks, the great book about the Lakota and their history. And Charlotte was trying to establish the fact that the Lakota were in the Black Hills much earlier than historians claimed. And she was using a phenomenon called precession of the equinoxes and a star map on a buffalo hide to prove the fact that the Lakota were there thousands of years ago in the Black Hills. And they recognized this great celestial buffalo in the sky. And it corresponded to certain places in the Black Hills that they migrated to annually and did certain sacred ceremonies in a certain place at a certain time of the year. So I got this idea of, as you say, as above, so below, from the Lakota people originally. And then I moved down to Arizona in 1994. And I started going to some of the Kachina dances on the Hopi Reservation. Now, the Kachinas Some of your listeners may recognize the Kachina dolls that the Hopi and other tribes still carve. They're dolls to represent these spirit messengers. And these Kachinas are kind of like angels. They are go-betweens between the realm of the deity or the great spirit and the realm of people. So they're intercessors between these two planes. And I started going to some of these Kachina dances up on the reservation. And at the same time, I was reading Robert Bouval's and Adrian Gilbert's book, The Orion Mystery, which, of course, talks about the Giza Plateau and the three main pyramids laid out on the Giza Plateau to correspond to Orion's Belt, the great winter constellation that most everybody recognizes, the constellation Orion, because it's so brilliant in the sky. And I was going up to one of these Kachina dances, and I was gazing off into the distance, driving up to the mesas. Now, the Hopi live on three primary mesas. They built villages both on top of the mesas and at the base of the mesas. And they've been up there for at least 1,000 years building these pueblos, these stone, they're kind of like stone apartment buildings. And they built a lot of different sites on these three primary mesas, and that's what they consider the center of the world. In the Hopi, it's called Tuanasavi, the center of their cosmos. And I was, just kind of idly looking up towards them, these three primary mesas, and with this information about the Giza, the Giza correlation, and I thought, well, maybe there's an Orion correlation right here in Arizona. So I put that in the back of my mind, and then I went up to the Kachina dances and saw the dances, and then I went home and got out a star chart. And then I got out a map of Arizona and was comparing the two. And I realized that there was a one-to-one correspondence to each major star in the constellation. They corresponded to a particular village or ruin site that the Hopi had or were still inhabiting. So it just kind of really blew me away that this correlation was so exact, that all the stars were there in this template laid out on the Arizona desert.
It's fascinating. And when you talk about the celestial buffalo, can we talk a little bit further about that? Because one of the things you talk about further on in your book is that this is a place where one goes to have visions, to enter the spirit world. And of course, the buffalo is so important to the North American indigenous peoples that I'd be really interested in how they use that particular ability to locate those stars relative to these earth sites and then use them specifically to enter the spirit world.
Well, obviously these were spirit visions that were given to them by the ancestors, by the star people, that they laid out this series of sites where the Lakota migrated around the Black Hills, and they made an annual migration to different sites. There are three plains or prairies inside the Black Hills, and they represent the Bell Stars of Orion. And at a certain time of the year, the Lakota go there and do a particular ceremony, and they wind up at summer solstice at Devil's Tower in Wyoming, which a lot of your listeners recognize from the Steven Spielberg movie, mm-hmm. Close Encounters, of course. But this was a great Sundance area for the Lakota. They did an annual Sundance at Mato Tipilia, it's called in Lakota. Mm-hmm. But they were in contact with the star ancestors, just like the Hopi were in contact with these star messengers or these Kachinas.
And what you show is that, and the book is brilliant, your book, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest. I just have to say, I don't think you left a whole lot of open-ended questions other than maybe some that we're not yet able to answer. But in terms of showing the correlates between Orion and other star systems and these earthworks, it's you did a beautiful job. And so what happens is, you're welcome, is you talked about something that people refer to as the Arizona chakra system. And you said that even the Hopis have a five chakra system, which Frank Water writes about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Frank, back in the early 60s, the Book of the Hopi is a classic book that a lot of people consult. He said that his informant said that there was a five chakra system. Now, some chakra systems are six and some are seven, really, chakra lines. And I noticed when looking at this template on the Arizona desert, and you can go to my website, theorionzone.com, and there's a page of maps that you can see pretty clearly what I'm talking about. It's hard to visualize what I'm talking about unless you see it on a map. And mm-hmm. I've got a maps page that you can click on and see the comparison between Orion and the Arizona desert, these sites on the Arizona desert. But I noticed when looking at this pattern that there were a number of lines of sites, about a dozen sites, really. And it goes up into southwestern Colorado, a place called Mesa Verde National Monument, where there are a number of cliff dwellings and ruin sites up there. And this line goes from southwestern Colorado all the way through the Three Hopi Mesas, down through the head of Orion, which is a place called Walnut Canyon, east of Flagstaff, Arizona. And this line, this chakra line, goes all the way down and hits the Colorado River. And, I make a point in my book, also one of my books, the Orion Zone, that this line can be extended into the Pacific. And my recent book, Star Shines and Earthworks, I make this point that the Hopi had this migration legend that they came from the Pacific Ocean and they migrated on reed boats across the Pacific. And I provide some genetic evidence sort of suggests that the Hopi indeed came from the Western Pacific or Southern Pacific region and migrated on these reed boats, just like their mythology says.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that has interested Bob and I so much, and why so many of the guests, and you know pretty much all the people who have worked in this field that we've interviewed as well, is that there is so much consensus now from traditions worldwide, whether it's Aborigines or Hopis or Egyptians or prior continents of Mu, et cetera, which maybe we'll get to. But in any event, then what you're showing is that the living body of man and the living body of the earth are constructed in the same way. And so we have these natural alignments of what you referred to as pranic energy lines. You just mm-hmm. mentioned, flowing from Mesa Verde to other sites in Arizona and onward. So how do these alignments, meaning if they're all connected to the Orion star system and that then points to the galactic center, what was actually taking place? Because you have some fascinating hypotheses we'll get to a little further down the line.
Well, the Hopi are in contact with these star ancestors and the Zuni people as well. The Zuni live not far from the Hopi in New Mexico, and they also have the star ancestors, and they're in contact with these. And the Hopi and the Zuni are still doing the ceremonies. They're still up there living a very simple life. They're agrarians. That means that they are basically farmers, and they've been that way for over 1,000 years, farming corn, beans, and squash primarily. Mm-hmm. And they have the help of these Kachinas to bring them rainfall, particularly in the spring and early summer. The Kachinas come and assist them in this agricultural way. So the Kachinas are coming down from the stars and helping the Hopi with their farming, with the agriculture. And The Arizona desert, of course, can be a very harsh place. It's very, very hot in the summer, and it can be quite cold in the winter, believe it or not. You know, it's a high desert, so the people are in touch with these spiritual messengers in order to assist them with their farming and with their star knowledge. They have this star knowledge, and it's my belief that the Hopi were told where to place their ruin sites by these star ancestors. Otherwise, the pattern would not be quite as exact as it is. And you can look on the map and see, yes, that's the Orion constellation. And the Hopi use Orion in a very specific way. It's the most important constellation for the Hopi. They call it Hotamkan, which means beads on a string, the belt stars of Orion. And the Hopi do ceremonies in what's called a kiva, or an underground prayer chamber. And there is an overhead hatchway that a ladder sticks up through, and they descend on this ladder to this ceremonial chamber. And they see Orion rising in this overhead hatchway, and that signals the start of the winter solstice ceremony, which is called Soyal. So the Orion constellation basically synchronizes this solar ceremony, the winter solstice, which is very important to the Hopi, because they have to keep track of where in the agricultural calendar they are. They look at the sun rising on the horizon and keep track. There are sun watchers, or Tawel Mungwi, they call them, and the sun watchers keep track of where the sun is rising each day on the horizon. And of course, on the winter solstice, it rises the farthest south, and then it starts to move back north again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the agricultural calendar involves both solar and stellar phenomenon.
And of course, we see this worldwide with cultures, as I mentioned earlier, as far ranging as the Aborigine or the sure. Egyptian culture. And the thing that's so interesting to me is the amount of civilizations still existing today, and whose peoples will claim that their ancestry are from Orion or the Pleiades or Sirius or some other star system within that part of the solar system or the cosmos. So it's very interesting. We're going to take a break. Our guest is Gary David. His most recent 2012 release is entitled Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest. It's an Adventures Unlimited 2012 release. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, this is Itzhak Beery, the author of The Gift of Shamanism, Visionary Power, Ayahuasca Dreams, and Journeys to the Other Realms. I'm really happy to be with you on the 21st Century Radio, hosted by Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. You can reach me at itzhakbeery.com, or you can see my book at www.thegiftofshamanism.com.
I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, and this is 21st Century Radio. Let's return now to our interview. So in talking about the Orion Zone, specifically, Gary, you talk about the spiral or vortex being important to this zone. So describe this for us.
The spiral, of course, is important in the constellation Orion. There's a magnetic spiral naturally that goes down from the belt and extends that way. But the spiral, the Hopi made a kind of like a spiral migration across the desert southwest, and even farther back east. And they made this grand spiral, and they finally came to the center place I talked about before, the northern Arizona. But before that time, they migrated to the Pacific Ocean, and they made a giant arc up into Canada. There's proof that some rock paintings in Alberta, Canada, are of Hopi origin, from the Snake Clan in particular. And then also the Hopi migrated back east to at least as far as Ohio, because some claim that the Hopi Snake Clan helped to build Serpent Mound in southern Ohio. So there's this spiral movement across the Southwest and gradually tightening in to the center place, the Tawanasabe in the Arizona desert, where the Hopi have settled for the last 1,000 years, and they have remained pretty much stable where, mm-hmm. you know, in northern Arizona. They haven't done any further migration routes.
But it's interesting you talked about that. I mean, you mentioned just now the Ohio Snake Mound or Serpent Mound, that the Hopi themselves, however, didn't traditionally go around building mounds, I mean, or pyramids, as we've seen, but they set their villages, as you mentioned earlier, often on high sites, and then they allow these geological formations to do, I suppose, what other cultures in flat lands had to do by building mounds and pyramids.
Sure. The Mesa or the Butte in the desert Southwest, it's a proxy pyramid. It's to bring the people up so they're closer to the star ancestors, and they can view view the landscape below and the sky above, and they are it's a natural pyramid for the Hopi. The Hopi weren't ever really pyramid builders like the Maya in Mexico and Central America. Though the Hopi were in touch with the Maya people, there's evidence of this. The Maya parrots or macaws, the birds, these jungle birds, were transported from Yucatan Peninsula and around that area up into the desert Southwest, into the Phoenix Basin and northern Arizona. And archaeologists have found these macaws in the burial sites of the ancestral Hopi people. So the Hopi were in touch with some of the Maya over their migration period. And some of the Hopi stayed down there in the Maya territory, and some of the clans came up and settled in central Arizona. So the Hopi used these natural pyramids, the Mesa, in order to bring them closer to the star ancestors.
It's interesting because in another chapter you talk about the relationship between the Berber people and the Hopi, and then you do it. I mean, I just love the way you sort of go about following your intuition and then look for the information that might flesh out, if you will, the intuitive hunches that you have, like all good mystery solvers. I mean, that's what I like about this kind of work myself, which is that you can get a whole picture in your mind, and then you can spend 10 or 15 years trying right. to get all the details together
it's
prove your
long,
one picture.
It's been a long research project. Like yeah. I said, I've been at it since 1997,
yeah.
and I've got 5 books so far.
Well, but the correlate exists, and this is the thing that so fascinates me, I mentioned, and it was a long introduction, and I tend not to do that, but it just strikes me as audacious that the Royal Navy just unhinged our entire consciousness from that which had once kept us all connected. So my question is that unhinging, when we went from the longitudinal meridian marker at Giza, which was the Orion star system, and it was moved 30 degrees, I think it was, I can't remember exactly, I think it was degrees and 13 minutes and 1 second. Enormous change anyway, a whole house sign in astrology. But Before that happened, is the notion that all of these matrix connections is what enabled telepathy between all of these cultures from one side of the world to the other?
Well, I think there had been a certain psychic connection between, say, Egypt and the American Southwest. And there's, for instance, a story about Egyptian artifacts in the Grand Canyon. Okay, the Grand Canyon is the place where the Hopi say that they emerged from. There's a place called the Sipapu or Sipapuni in the Grand Canyon. And it's an actual geological formation on the north bank of the Little Colorado River. And it's called a travertine dome. And you look at this structure, this geological structure, and there's a hole right in the middle of it. And water comes out of this hole. Well, the Hopi say that they emerged from the third world into this current fourth world, which we're living. A lot of the Hopi elders say we're living right at the end of the fourth world, and we're just about ready to go into the fifth world. So the Hopi have this cyclic sense of time, just like the Maya did. They're different epochs of time that expend themselves, and then we go into another age. Well, the Hopi came up from the third world into the fourth world at a specific place in the Grand Canyon. And this is a place where there is some evidence, though some people kind of discount it. It should be looked at, I think, the lost city of the dead in Grand Canyon, some call it. And there's a chapter in my book about this. And it comes from an article in the Arizona Gazette. It's April 5th, 1909. It's a Phoenix Daily newspaper that had this article. And the article talks about a man named G.E. Kincaid. And this man was working as a contract worker for the Smithsonian Institute. And he took a boat, a wooden boat, from Green River, Wyoming, and sailed it downstream through the Grand Canyon. And in the process of going downstream, he saw this cave up on the side of the wall. Now, if you've been to Grand Canyon, you know that there's it just drops off, you know. He saw this entrance of the cave 1,500 feet down from the rim and 2,000 feet above the river. And this article describes Kincaid making this arduous hike up to the entrance of this cave. And he entered this cave horizontally in the cliff, and he went over 100 feet into the cliff before he came to a number of chambers. And these chambers contained what could be considered Egyptian or Tibetan artifacts. Some people call them uparts, which are out-of-place artifacts, because Egyptian and Tibetan artifacts are not supposed to be found in the Grand Canyon, anywhere in the New World, in fact. And some of these artifacts included gold cups and weapons, copper weapons, and there was a kind of a smelting operation there that the article describes. And this is a front-page article. It's over 2,000 words long of the daily paper in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And he supposedly found hieroglyphics on stone tablets. He found a carved statue, a life-size statue of Buddha in a lotus posture with a lotus in each hand. And he also found a giant room with a bunch of Egyptian-style mummies either lying down or lying against the side of the chamber. And this was a huge chamber. The article said, and this is hard to believe, that this complex that he encountered could contain over 50,000 people in this labyrinth of caves down in the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
And if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, you know that it's really torturous and harsh, and you can hike to certain parts of the Grand Canyon, but not, they won't let you into all parts of the Grand Canyon. So a lot of people think that Kincaid found this material, these artifacts, and they were shipped back east. He was working for the Smithsonian, and they were shipped back east. During that time, during 1908 and 1909, there was a man named Charles Walcott. He was the secretary of the Smithsonian. And Walcott was very well connected. He knew Teddy Roosevelt and Calvin Coolidge and Woodrow Wilson and Andrew Carnegie, the millionaire. And so Kincaid would have been shipping these artifacts to Charles Walcott. Well, it turns out in my research, I found out that Walcott had been to this very spot where it says in the article that Kincaid found this great complex. Walcott had worked for the USGS, the Geological Survey, 30 years before. And he had been in 1882 and 83, he had been down in Grand Canyon working for the USGS. And he made a map of this exact spot where Kincaid later found this complex. So it might be that Walcott found this complex himself and just kept it under wraps because it wouldn't be it's not the paradigm. It's not the archaeological paradigm that that was current during the day, that you find Egyptian and Tibetan artifacts in the Grand Canyon. So he might have found it then, or he might have said, well, that's an odd looking entrance up on the cliff wall. Maybe we should find somebody to explore that. And I think he, in fact, did later on when he was Secretary of the Smithsonian.
It's just fascinating. Look, we have to take our last break of the evening. When we come back, though, there were other things you showed that were correlates between the Hopi tradition and the Egyptian tradition. And one in particular I'd like to talk about is what you call the Shining One. So if you're just joining us, Gary David is our guest. He's an author of many books, the most recent one, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
My name is Lee Elders. I'm the author of Expeditions, Gold Shaman, and Green Fire. It's a true adventure about my journeys into Ecuador during the 60s in search for a lost emerald mine. I want to thank Dr. Zoe Hieronymus and 21st Century Radio for allowing me the opportunity to come forward with this interesting story. It is a true story. You want to see the photographs, some of them in color, go to my website, www.leeelders.com. The website gives you excerpts on the book, but the main thing I enjoy about what I'm hearing is I put the reader right into the adventure. Dr. Zoe Hieronymus, 21st Century Radio, is the way to go.
And we're back. Now let's return to our program, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest. So coming back to something I mentioned before the break, because you've been speaking about finding all of these artifacts, Egyptian artifacts, Buddhist artifacts, and others in the Grand Canyon, in this area that has been found, you mentioned, by two gentlemen much earlier in history, G.E. Kincaid, and the other was C.D. Walcott. And what, though, you point out that there are other connections, and one of them is through this fascinating being called, or beings called, the Shining One.
Yeah, exactly. The Shining Ones are known throughout different cultures as a kind of an extraterrestrial or stellar or celestial beings that come down to help us people on Earth to see visions. Now, the Hopi, like the ancient Egyptians, had this idea of the underworld. I said before that they came up from the third world, which is the underworld, through this giant, they conceptualize it as a giant reed, coming up through the reed, through this travertine dome called the Sipapu or Sipapuni, and coming from an underworld place. So the Hopi lived in this underworld, and they were familiar with the beings of this underworld place, just like the Egyptians. The Egyptians called it the Duat, or sometimes Tuat. It's spelled D-U-A-T. And the Hopi have a similar word. It's spelled T-U-A-T, and Tuat, which means the place where mystical visions are achieved. This is the underworld place that the Hopi knew. And Additionally, I should mention that after a Hopi person dies, this person goes back into the underworld to meet the ancestors. And I want to point out now that a great Hopi elder recently passed on within the last 48 hours. His name is Grandfather Martin Gesh Wesioma. He was from Third Mesa, the village of Hope Villa. And he was a great elder for many years. He and a number of other Hopi elders went to the UN a number of times, pleading for peace. This man recently passed on. He was in his 90s, and he's walking the spirit road right now, and he's going down into this underworld place where the Hopi people achieve these mystical visions and to meet these shining ones that you mentioned, these celestial ancestors that are paradoxically considered in the underworld, but they're also in the outer space as well. That's kind of the paradox that we on this earth plane have to deal with, that a place can be in the heavens and in the underworld at the same time. That's the way the Hopi and a lot of cultures, such as the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, conceptualized this underworld place.
Something else when I was reading your book that I went, well, now that's really interesting. What are they doing here? So you talk about something called the Stone Lion Shrines in New Mexico. What is their purpose and who built them?
These sculptures are at the Bandelier National Monument. They're kind of out of the way place in Bandelier. And they're called the guardian spirits of this particular place. And there are two sculptures like this, and no one has really been able to describe, you know, why they're there. They're obviously very ancient, and two kind of lions faced in the opposite direction. And, of course, there are mountain lions all over the Southwest. But these sculptures are just kind of an enigma. Like many of the things around the Southwest, like Kincaid's Cave, it's hard to they have parallels to the ancient Egyptian system where the two guardians of the East and the West, that might be related to that. They're guarding both the sunrise and the sunset, which were important, both to the Egyptians and the Hopi, as I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. And there was another people you described, the Hohokam. Is that how you pronounce that?
The Hohokam, yeah. They are contemporary with the Hopi, the ancestral Hopi. They lived a little bit farther south in the Phoenix, in the area of Phoenix, Arizona right now, but they lived in the Phoenix Basin. And these, they lived from like 300 BC until 1300 AD. So they had a 1,000-year run of their culture. And they built platform mounds. Unlike the Hopi, they built these mounds, that these flat top pyramids. These mounds, and some are as big as a football field. And to think that they would build these mounds out of rock and dirt without the use of the wheel or without, you know, any kind of draft animal or anything like that. They carried these rocks and dirt on their backs and made these flat top mounds that are just immense. And you can see these today. And then they built their village on top of the mounds. They were mostly adobe villages, which is different from the Hopi. The Hopi built stone villages. So we can see the remains of a lot of Hopi villages now. But there's some left of the adobe, the mud villages of the Hohokam. But they were just an amazing culture that they thrived in this very hot, low desert area. And they built these immense canals. Some say that they built like 500 miles of canals across the desert, irrigational canals. And the main canals, they were like 75 feet across and like 12 feet deep. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a massive undertaking. You know, they've been compared to the building of the pyramids in Egypt, and these archaeologists in the early 20th century, you know, said, well, this massive undertaking was like building the pyramids, because, you know, they had to transport all this rock and the dirt material to both build the platform mounds and dig the canals. It was just an amazing system that the Holcomb functioned under in order to survive in this desert arid region.
I don't remember that from history class.
No,
Gary, I don't think they taught us that.
No, the whole mound building culture in the East, Cahokia, and the mounds in the Eastern United States, I think maybe have been connected to this Holcomb society. They probably traded back and forth, because they've found different artifacts in the East, and also artifacts from the Pacific Ocean. So these people got around more than what we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. A lot of history books don't give credit to the fact that these people were on the move. They knew the terrain. They knew the territory. They moved much farther than what traditional academics will claim.
And they had phenomenal astronomical knowledge and beyond medicine. I mean, there are so many things we've talked about on the program. I know Bob was recently joined by someone you know quite well, Court Lindahl, and of course David Childress and Robert Bevall and Robert Temple. I mean, all these guys have been on the program over the decades. And so this brings me then to the big question. Here you are spending the last 20 years studying this sort of, I guess we call it the star correlate theory, as above, so below, that the star systems above us are reflected in most cultures, I would say, up until the 1600s, when we lost that essential alignment, so that all cultures were actually looking to the same parts of the cosmos as signatories for their own calendars, for their own ritual systems, for their own alignment among themselves. So is this useful? I mean, is there something we can do with this to help us as a civilization today?
Well, we can realize this sacred knowledge was in existence very early on, maybe over 10,000 years ago. There was a grand civilization that had all this celestial knowledge. And I think that the Hopi and different Pueblo people came from the continent of Mu, in which their myths clearly state that they got on reed rafts, escaping a great flood, and they came to the North American continent. But this knowledge was, I think, probably in Atlantis and probably in Mu very early on, all this sacred knowledge, focusing on the constellation Orion. And I believe that the star ancestors from Orion are involved in this whole thing.
Well, the reason I asked you about those stone lions is that in Africa, among the Zulu and others, they'll tell you that Orion is where the lion elders come from, and that the lions themselves come from. And then they're connected to Regalis. And I mean, it's so interesting to me to track how many native cultures point to the Pleiades or the star system Sirius or different parts of Orion. Mm-hmm. Or the Great Bear. I mean, there aren't that many star systems they point to, but there are plenty of star systems one could choose. And so it always fascinates me that they keep pointing back to the same star systems as being where the ancestors come from, whether it's the Cherokee or the Aborigine or
the Dogon.
Other. Yeah, the Dogons, exactly.
A similar belief.
Right.
That they built they placed stones on a plateau. Similar to the Giza pyramids, they actually did this in the form of Orion, but they also were cognizant of the star Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky. And on the template, the southwestern template, the star Sirius corresponds to the site of Chaco Canyon in northern New Mexico, and this is the largest a ruined site in the American Southwest. It's got many celestial alignments of the different buildings in this canyon. And according to this template, the star Sirius falls right into Chaco Canyon. So I think there was some assistance from the star elders that made them settle in this particular canyon, which is a pretty desolate place. If even today you go there, there's not much there. There's no flowing water there, and there wasn't flowing water when the people built these great buildings about 800 AD. They started the culture in Chaco Canyon. So this has been going on. This star knowledge, I think, was very early established in civilization. The many different cultures had it. The Egyptians had it. The Dogons had it. You mentioned the Africa. I call it the Africa Prime Meridian,
mm-hmm.
that goes down from Giza,
yeah.
and goes down through Nopta Playa, which is the oldest observatory probably in the world. It goes back many thousands of years, and that is an Orion correlation. There's also an Orion correlation in South Africa, and this meridian falls right in line with the Giza Plateau and Nopta Playa, and it's all along the meridian, the longitude line.
I've been following that myself, Gary, for a new book on the sacred white lions of Timbasavati, Africa. But we're going to say good evening. Gary David's been our guest, and this is where we have to say goodbye. 21st Century Radio is produced by Hieronymus and Company. Our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner, and I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. And remember, we do need more love in the world.